I'm Laura Vegas, and I'm here with Dr. Nick Furl, and we are in the Sun Inn in Richmond celebrating and chatting about his new publication that was recently published in Psychological Science that's called Facial Attractiveness Choices Predicted by Divisive Normalization. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Congratulations on your paper.
Thank you.
Let's toast to it. Cheers. I'm having a Peroni, and you're having an Oliver's Twist Golden Ale. Is it good?
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah?
Hoppy.
So let's get right into it. I usually ask what the research question is. That's the first question I ask, and you made it really easy for me because the first sentence of the abstract was exactly the research question. It was, do people appear more or less attractive depending on the company they keep? That's the research question, yes?
Yes.
Yes. Can you tell me why you had that question?
When people make choices about things that they value or make preference decisions, it's often assumed by economists and common knowledge that your preferences are fixed and they're always the same all the time. But in reality, you might like the same thing more or less depending on the context. And I wanted to see whether that was true for social decisions that people make about their preferences and other people.
Has this never been done in social judgments, or at least how you did it with attractiveness, ratings or judging people's attractiveness?
Yeah, not the exact experiment I did. The specific context effects I showed haven't been done before.
Okay.
Of course, or I wouldn't be publishing it.
Right, in Psychological Science.
There have been other types of context effects for faces that are somewhat different, though.
Let's talk about what the methods were. What did the participants do?
What I wanted to get at was the kind of experience that you get when maybe three friends go into a bar. And they're in the bar and they're looking to meet, say, mates. And
mates as in partners, potential partners?
Potential partners, okay. Yeah, or dates. And so when they meet these people, they're hoping that they will be the ones that are chosen rather than their friends. We kind of were simulating this situation a little bit in the experiment. So the subjects would see three faces on the screen and they would have to pick the most attractive one.
So three at the same time,
yeah.
All different attractiveness? Or how did you...
So we rigged the game for them. So before they made these choices, we showed them a bunch of faces, and one by one. And some of the faces were the ones that they made choices about later on. And they just rated their attractiveness. So basically we knew which faces were their favorites and which were their least favorites.
Okay.
Exactly how the faces ranked for each individual subject. And then we rigged the game so that on every single trial, when they saw three faces, it was always two of the subject's favorites.
Okay.
And one of the subject's least favorites.
So you've got two attractive people and one not attractive person based on their rating.
Based on their ratings,
right.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, yes. This is sometimes referred to as the...
I have heard it called the ugly friend effect.
Right, so...
For this reason.
Which
yes.
is offensive, but... appropriate, maybe.
Descriptive in a,
right, yeah.
in a sort of way.
So you'd hate to be that ugly friend. But okay, so that's what they did. They rated the three people, or they picked out, of the three, picked out which one they found most attractive.
The unattractive person isn't really a competitor. The subject's never really going to choose that person.
Okay.
So it's really between the other two. That's kind of an irrelevant, a person who would be irrelevant for most people's choices. It would be between the two really attractive ones.
And did you also manipulate the attractiveness or the ugliness of the least attractive person?
We did, yes. And that's what the main finding is all about, actually. What we measured was how much, for the two attractive faces, the ones who are really competing for the subject's choice, we measured how much they preferred one over the other, really what the difference is between the preference of those two attractive faces. And what we found was the uglier, or the less attractive,
yeah.
that the third face was, the more they actually preferred one of the more attractive faces over the other one.
They were basically head-to-head. The attractive people, nearly head-to-head from the attractiveness ratings you got before from the participants.
Yeah.
And if there was a very ugly... It feels uncomfortable saying that there was a very ugly person in the triad. Then they discriminated more between the two attractive people.
In a way, they were more choosy between the two favorites. So they discriminated between them more often.
So what does this mean?
I actually predicted this ahead of time.
Well.
Because there's a sort of a simple model about how neurons, brain cells work, that actually predicts that this should happen. That's what that jargony sounding expression in the title is, divisive normalization.
Right. Okay, so what exactly is that?
So that's a really simple process. Neurons, they send these electrical potentials where they fire. And when they do that, sometimes they're signaling something that's out in the world, right? So, for example, the photoreceptors in your eye signal the presence, how much light there is.
Yeah.
So they'll fire more when the light increases. So what happens is that it has to map its firing rate onto the amount of light that there is. And so for example, when you wake up in the morning and your eyes are dark adapted because they've been shut and it's been night, at first everything appears to be really, really bright and it hurts your eyes.
Yes,
until the neurons in the back of your eyes readjust to the kind of ambient light levels.
Okay.
Divisive normalization is just a sort of description of how that works. So if you're looking at an object, you know, the amount to which your neuron responds to the light coming from that object depends on how much light is in the whole, it surrounds the object, is in the whole visual area.
So
it does
matter. Context matters.
Yeah, exactly. So how bright you perceive an individual object is depends on the context, the room, the light, the ambient light levels that it's in.
So you took this perceptual theory, decision-making. Is it a decision-making theory or a theory of perception?
It was originally developed for the visual system, for things like adaptation to light levels. It also works in at higher levels of the visual system, how you respond to contrasts and motion.
For what you did, it seems like a decision-making model.
So people are testing whether divisive normalization, they're sort of testing whether this is like a universal principle that the nervous system uses.
Yeah.
So it's been getting tested in more and more and more contexts.
Right.
It's already been shown in some decision-making contexts, and I wanted to see whether it would show up also in a sort of very high-level social decision-making kind of context as well.
And it did.
And it does, yeah.
That is so exciting. You also conducted a control type of experiment. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was basically the same experiment, but instead of judging the attractiveness or choosing the most attractive face, they would choose the most average face.
Oh.
That sounds like a bit of an unnatural kind of judgment.
Yeah.
I mean, you probably wouldn't make as often as you would an attractiveness judgment. But the reason that we chose that as a control for attractiveness. So a lot of people feel that, or have argued that how average a face is an influence over how attractive you find it.
Oh, right.
So averageness probably uses some of the same visual information in the face as attractiveness judgments do. And so the subjects might be looking at the same visual and assessing the same visual information as they would with attractive judgment. But there isn't really any value. Most people don't.
Not a subjective type of value associated
exactly.
with it, not as much.
An average face isn't necessarily better than an unaverage face in the way that an attractive face is better than an attractive face of the subject.
Okay.
So it's a control experiment in that it's based on similar visual information, but it doesn't have that sense of value about it.
And did you find the same thing? Did it replicate?
We got the same thing. Yeah,
oh, excellent. Yeah. Nice. So what's next then?
Well, I think there's a lot of ways that this might be applied. Pretty much any time you want to predict how attractive a face is going to look, this might be relevant. So people who, are on online dating might want to see how attractive that their images appear. Many people post pictures of themselves with their friends on the internet.
So they should pick a little bit less attractive friend and an ugly friend to be in that photo, is that true?
And then they'll, they would look the most attractive.
Well.
That would maximize
it. Okay,
how attractive they
that's,
look. Yeah,
so that's some great advice.
But I guess if you're developing advertising, or if you're making a movie and you want your leading man to look the most attractive, you could use this, take this advice as well.
Or say you're an ugly person, you should take one for the team and go out with your friends, but really dress down.
Mm.
Like don't wash your hair.
Maybe this is the new role for the wingman.
Yeah. Okay, so there are applied things that you can do. Are you following up on any more research?
I'm also a neuroscientist, and I want to put this in the functional magnetic resonance imaging scanner.
Yeah.
This is predicted based on a model of how neurons work, and basically we're going to want to find these neurons and catch them in the act. So we want to scan the brain and see what brain areas show this kind of normalization. And
yeah. Congratulations again on your paper being published
Thank
in one of the
much.
Flagship journals of our field. I am going to think a lot more when I go out with friends about what they look like and what I look like. Congratulations, and
Thank
thanks
you.
For the interview.